morning. Thanks for being here. Looks like most people are leaving to avoid the storm. I'm going to give my presentation today on some work we've been doing in the lab on whitefly gene knockouts and mortality. And we're specifically targeting genes in the whitefly gut with RNAi. So most people here in the insect community are aware that Babesia tabaci is an important insect pest of cotton and also vector of a number of viruses that infect cotton nearly worldwide. Control mainly relies on chemical insecticide use, and there have been a lot of problems created by overuse of insecticides, creating resistance in especially the broad host range Babesia tabaci haplotypes. So we're interested in considering the possibility of using RNAi interference as a means of causing mortality and also at the same time not increasing or resulting in resistance. So RNAi is a homology-dependent innate immune response that occurs naturally in eukaryotes, and including in insects. And it causes gene silencing by degrading the corresponding transcript that's recognized by a double-stranded RNA. And typically the sequence homology needs to be close to or right on 100%. So gene knockdown that interferes with gene expression will result in no protein being made from that messenger RNA. And so that's the principle by which this operates. And then, of course, if the protein that's knocked down is crucial to the livelihood of the insect or a really important biochemical pathway, it can result in mortality, and that would be the objective that we would have here. One of the caveats of RNAi in insects and other organisms is that knockdown can be rescued by gene isoforms that can occur elsewhere in the insect, and so it can actually rescue the silencing and make it less effective. That's because they share the same sequence. However, often the rescue effect results in a delay, and you can still see an effect from the silencing in time. But of course, with most insects we want to target, we don't want to allow them time in the field, and especially when you're talking about virus transmission. So one of the things that we've learned is that Babesia tabaci, this is through sequencing, as Babesia tabaci has SID1-like genes that are implicated in systemic silencing in other insects. And so we hypothesize that we would expect to see some systemic silencing as well as localized silencing in the gut. So the very first work that was done, maybe not the very first, but at least the early work. I don't want to slight anyone if this was done elsewhere. I'm aware of the work done by Muti et al. With aphids, in which they first showed the knockdown, RNAi knockdown of a salivary gene. They didn't know what the function of the gene was, so they didn't know what phenotype to expect. But as it turned out, they were able to, it actually did kill the aphid when they silenced the gene. It lowered the lifespan and then eventually caused mortality. And they weren't, at that time, it wasn't known whether aphids had encoded SID1-like proteins, but now it is known, and so it's clear from their results that they actually did also experience some systemic silencing in time. A second example, and this one is specific for whiteflies, comes from some work done by Murad Ghanim, in which he showed organ and tissue-specific gene silencing. And he targeted three genes initially, but had no phenotype. He could show that the qPCR results were indicative of gene silencing or reduced expression, but he had no phenotype. So his second set of experiments, he targeted a gene called chickadee that's involved in development. And his aim, of course, was to not only silence the gene, but also show a phenotype. And so he succeeded in this endeavor. And then most recently, we've seen transgenic plants being developed expressing RNAi constructs. And a number of them now have been shown to be effective, but in particular, this one attacking Coleopteran, has been really important. The number of insects, as most of us know, are not susceptible to BT toxin type approaches, and or BT hasn't been developed for them, even if they are susceptible. So this gives an opportunity for another kind of a transgenic approach for controlling insects. So our objectives were to select whitefly gut genes from our transcriptome libraries. And these were constructed from the alimentary canal or the gut of the whitefly. We use the B biotype. It is the predominant pest and vector in the United States and also in a number of other parts of the world. We identified 6 genes in silico that we would predict should have a phenotype, and then tested those for knockdown efficacy after giving the whiteflies access to the double-stranded RNA. And we built our double-stranded RNAs to be 100% homologous to each of the genes. We determined the efficacy of the knockdown in a functional bioassay and tested for mortality. We did that at 24-hour intervals for 6 days, so every other day post-treatment. So these were our genes, the acetylcholine receptor subunit A, alpha-glucosidase 1, aquaporin 1, heat-shock protein, trioase, and triolose transporter. These are the primers showing the sequences of the genes. So here was just briefly, we used 150 to 200 adult whiteflies and allowed them to ingest double-stranded RNA through in a sucrose, sterile sucrose solution through a parafilm membrane, and then we monitor them 2, 4, and 6 days post-treatment. We use real-time quantitative PCR to look at gene expression, and then subjected each of the treated white flies to a gene-specific bioassay. We also confirmed that the RNA was stable over the course of the 6 days, which is very important because if you lose, you probably can be effective even if the RNA degrades after 1 or 2 days. But for these kinds of experiments, it's really important to be sure that your RNA is stable for the entire time so you can interpret your results. Our bioassays, which we hoped would give us a phenotype or functional prediction for the gene. Remember, our functions were based on in silico prediction, so we expected if that was a correct annotation that we should see an effect on osmolarity and or a neurotransmission from the NAR subunit alpha, and on thermotolerance of the white fly with the heat shock protein silencing, and then also with the sugar metabolism and sugar transport out of the gut, we assumed that we should see some pretty serious mortality because if you can't process the sugar or transport it out of the gut in a little while, you've seen the little picture of the mosquito that blows up. That's probably what will happen to the white fly if they can't transport that sugar out of the gut. So here is a summary of our quantitative PCR amplification results. In general, I'm not going to go through each one of these, but you can follow from left to right from this is day 1, day 4, day 6. This was the first, the treatment here, and you can see each of the genes. So this is the acetylcholine esterase. You see a progressive increase in silencing over time, and you see that for each of the genes that we were testing. So this is good. We got knockdown, and then our next step was to do the bioassays and look for phenotype. And so table 3 is related to table 4 in that this 1, 4, and 6 days, this is the treatment mortality without the challenge of the insecticide. So you'll notice that we do have a progressive increase in silencing over time. And then when we challenge by treating the whitefly with insecticide with imidacloprid, you see that we have extremely high mortality in those insects because they're completely unprotected and unable to metabolize that insecticide. So very, very high rates. In terms of our assay for osmoregulation. These two genes also, in a very short period, by day six, we had very, very high mortality. Table six and seven are related in the same way as I showed you for on the previous slide, except here our gene of interest is the heat shock protein. And again, you see a progressive increase in silencing, but still it's not excessive until we challenge the white fly by treating it at 37 degrees constant temperature over the 6 days. And you see then, we see by day four, five, and six, rapidly increasing mortality, and even as high as 99 and 100% in some of the trials. And then this was our sugar transport, and here what we did was allowed them to feed on different molalities of sucrose, and you can see that we also have reasonably high mortality here by the end of 6 days, and even half, about 50% by day four. So the quantitative PCR results indicate that all six genes tested showed significantly reduced gene expression due to RNAi. We saw moderate to very high mortality, and for downregulation of genes predicted to be involved in osmoregulation, sugar metabolism, and sugar transport. And we showed a clear link between white fly survivability and RNAi efficacy. We were able to silence the acetylcholine receptor subunit A and the heat shock proteins, showing initially low, as I showed you on the tables, white fly mortality. But then after those challenges, we saw extremely enhanced sensitivity to the treatment. Also, the oral delivery of gut-specific double-stranded RNAs along with the qPCR expression analysis and the corresponding gene-specific bioassay really offers a very nice approach for functional genomics analysis, including biopesticide target discovery. And this has been an approach that has not been feasible for many non-model insects because we lack sequence information unless it's for a conserved region of a conserved gene. So now if you have a transcriptome, it's not difficult to, for a non-model organism, it's not going to be difficult to do these kinds of assays. And some of the genes, as I mentioned, are conserved across insects. And so even if you don't have the transcriptome, some of them may be useful for silencing. On the other hand, if we want silencing to be specific, we want the genes from the particular organism so we can target just that specific region for that specific species. Because, of course, off-target and non-target effects are going to be very, very important if this is to be used practically. And then finally, transgenic expression of double-stranded RNA for knockdown has already been demonstrated to be useful. So we think that it shows some promise for insect pests and vectors where for which BT technology is not available. Okay, thank you for your time.
We still have plenty of time for questions.
Any questions? Comments? Yes.
So the six genes that you targeted for this study, how did you select those?
We selected them basically by considering their predicted function and the involvement, you know, in the, because we wanted mortality, we looked for genes we thought should cause a problem if they were silenced. I don't know of anyone else that's tested these per se. There was a paper presented recently by one of my former students who's an author here who looked at an osmoregulatory gene but not these two. Probably see more coming out, but yes.
So looking ahead, there's the topical application of RNAi or the transgenic application that you mentioned. And so you can incorporate these as transgenes and get plants to express double-stranded RNA, but I don't know the answer to this at all. How much of that double-stranded RNA will go extracellular and end up in the phloem or xylem?
That's an important consideration, and it's also a consideration if for a topical application, because we really don't have much information on topical as to persistence and how much RNA is required over a period of time in order to be effective. And in transgenic plants, I think it has to be studied on a case by case basis. But if you use a phloem specific promoter, you're going to enhance your chances of getting it into the phloem, at least where the white fly is feeding. So that would be the strategy. That's what they've done. They used a plant viral promoter for a DNA virus in the tobacco plants, I think, that they published on. So it looks like they didn't get as good a silencing as we did with the sucrose solution, but I think it's a matter of tweaking it and increasing your expression levels to the extent that